Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Brandon, I thought we had some good promos on this show, and I think Darby Allin maybe had the best, or at least was the most out of the normal range in terms of how long he went. And I liked it. I thought it was character defining, not only for himself, but also for MJF. And it led to, I think, the right kind of usage of Sting as not just a guy hanging out who follows Darby to the ring and doesn't really get treated as a big deal. This built up the match. It built up the importance of the title. It built up what a championship should mean and should stand for. It was Darby was opening up about therapy and how important it is, and he was injecting morality into what should define success in life and what truly leads to happiness, and did so in a way that I think was kind of cool and not preachy. How did it work for you?
Yeah, I'm typically not a big fan of Darby, and I haven't been for a while now. I just don't think that the character really works at a main event level. And so I was especially hesitant about him being inserted into this main event picture with MJF. I've been really concerned really with all three guys that are being inserted into this program with MJF, because I thought that Max is just showing them up on the microphone so much that the disparity is too big, and especially for a pay-per-view title match. But I thought that of all the promos that the three potential challengers have cut over the last several weeks as they kind of build towards this potential fatal four-way or something of the sort, I thought this was by far the best, and by far, I think, the best promo I have ever heard Darby Allin cut. It's the first time that he really drew me in with something other than his style of wrestling. I think that, you know, I sort of hit a wall with Darby as far as the in-ring stuff goes. Some of it is cool to me. Some of it just doesn't fit what I look for in pro wrestling, but I certainly understand the draw there. But to me, he's always been weak on the microphone, and I thought that sort of put a ceiling on his character. And tonight is really the first time where I felt like he showed that he could stand up to someone like Max in a talking setting. And I think Sting did well for the most part as well. I mean, he rambled and meandered there a little bit, and the Cody stuff, while it initially kind of came off almost like an oops, that was a mistake, he was able to wrangle it in enough for it to work within the context of the promo. So yeah, I thought that the opening segment as a whole, the promo with Darby and MJF and the match that preceded it with Darby and Swerve Strickland were the highlights of the show.
Yeah, I think Sting being treated as a big deal and talking about his history, and, you know, there's a gravitas that comes with him that should never be absent, or at least we shouldn't go years between reminding people, you know, what he sounds like and what he stands for and what his background is and what he brings to the table with the Darby relationship. I could have done totally without him saying, this guy who I went to war with for a world title is just like Rick was to me as I am to Darby. Because, like, last I checked, Sting and Darby weren't fighting for a world title in their on opposite ends of their primes. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, did Sting align with Flair at one point? Yeah, but it just didn't make sense to me. Like, well, this guy in the back who helped make me a star because he sold for me when I was green, it's just like me walking to the ring with Darby when he's a full-fledged wrestler with a defined character who knows who he is and can do all these crazy moves. I don't see the analogy, and I think it breaks kayfabe in just sort of a pointless, dumb way. The Cody stuff is kind of weird because I just don't – I mean, is it – is a typical Dynamite viewer going to go, oh, yeah, MJF and Cody, super close. Cody was like a mentor to MJF.
Yeah, yeah. That didn't really work for me. That's kind of where I thought he lost a little steam. And I get why he brought it up the way that he did, because it almost did seem like a mistake. Like it was a oops, like, you know, this is something we're not supposed to talk about. But that he tried to pull it back. But, yeah, I agree. I don't think that Cody and MJF were associated enough for that to work. If it were, if he were cutting that promo on like Ricky Starks, for example, that would make more sense to me.
Yes, totally, totally. But I don't want to dwell on that aspect of the negative, because I think there was just so much positive in there. I thought MJF was great. And you know, every time you think MJF is going to lean into some of the traps that lead to fans cheering him, and you know, we had a bit of that last week in Long Island, he just comes out and just, you know, hits triples and home runs, or base clearing triples and home runs, with what he says out there, and the way that he says it.
I loved him cutting off the crowd when they started to. Yeah,
yes, totally, totally. I mean, Jericho sort of played around with that and then decided, nah, I like the fans singing my song. So yeah, I mean, without recapping the whole thing, I will say this too: Sting, Sean Waltman, essential to the Wolfpack. Like, just because Sean is thinner and shorter and didn't, you know, have as many singles main events, like Hall Nash and Waltman were a threesome, and I thought it was a bit of a slight to leave him out and just give shout outs to Kevin and Scott. So Sean's a friend of mine, but I mean, come on, Sting. You know how Nash and Hall talk about how essential Waltman was, because at all those house shows, he did all the work while they stood on the ring apron and just tagged in for a big spot here and there. And he brought energy and was a pivot point to the Monday Night War when he jumped from the NWO to DX. So anyway, I got to get a few words in there, and I hope Sting sends an apology text to Sean or something. What is that? Unless they have an issue. Maybe they do. And Sting just doesn't like him and is like, I'm going to leave him out of my this retelling of history. And if that's the case, well, you know, maybe Sean deserves it. I don't know. But yeah, this made – like, I was with you on the pillar thing. I mean, I think they should have done more to build them up leading up to that segment a few weeks back. That said, they're sort of going, we know we got some work to do, and they're doing it. You know, I mean, this wasn't a nothing win by Darby over Swerve. I mean, this was a show with too much interference.
Yes.
And not enough match outcomes that seemed to really say much. So I any sort of compliment has that asterisk that it's like, let's settle down on every finish needing to be somebody distracting a referee and a bunch of people acting dopey leading to the finish, the referees and the wrestlers themselves. But that said, you know, we got a win over Swerve, and they're, you know, Jungle Boy's been talking more and sounding better. Sammy Guevara still just is an ill fit because he's a heel who's all over the place and doesn't really show – it doesn't show an understanding of how to present his character within the confines of a wrestling TV show, but I'm somewhat sympathetic, even though there's a track record there with him, you know, going for the insider stuff to pop the internet in a way that I think is really counterproductive to the narrative of the story he's in. That said, he's in a tough situation, you know, where MJF's the heel and Sammy's like, well, you know, I'd rather have Sammy Guevara aim exclusively at Darby and Jungle Boy and only treat MJF almost as this peripheral entity in the match, but mostly he's there to spoil Darby and Jungle Boy's dreams of being champ by beating MJF and try to paint himself positively relative to MJF and contrast to MJF. Just, again, focus on the two baby faces. And because that's about the only way to do it without either kind of half-turning yourself babyface and undercutting your character or the same thing for MJF. But overall, they're doing work imperfectly, but tonight impressively, to continue to build up that match, the Pillars rivalry, and pulling from their own history, which they have, you know, 4 years of at this point.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that you hit it on the head with Sammy Guevara. I think that when all four of them first stood in the ring together and Sammy cut his, you know, his fourth or his quarter of the promo, It felt like he was trying to out MJF because he needed to heel on both Darby Allin and Jungle Boy while also trying to, you know, get the fans to boo him while simultaneously also coming at the vastly superior heel MJF. If you're trying to out-heel MJF, you're going to lose every time. So it's definitely pertinent for him to, like you said, go the route of trying more exclusively to go after Darby and Jungle Boy and save the attacks on MJF specifically, just to note that, like, hey, I want to be world champion. If I've got to go through you, I've got to go through you. I want this title. So, yeah, I think that by focusing on each guy individually, like they did tonight with Darby, and the thing is that they have the luxury of time here, because presumably they're building this match for Double or Nothing. And if that's the case, then I think that, you know, you can take it 1 week at a time and give each guy their opportunity to stand in the ring with MJF, or in Sammy Guevara's case, maybe, you know, earn himself an opportunity and then have him talk about specifically Darby and Jungle Boy with allusions to MJF and wanting the championship. But I do think that they have done a much better job of setting the stage after that initial promo, which I just didn't think worked at the time. I just thought that it was attempting to shoehorn three guys who were not on MJF's level into a picture, into a title picture with him for the sake of, you know, forcing this Pillars matchup. And I don't think that the fans were thinking about the Pillars. They're thinking about MJF and his potential challengers. And when MJF is standing in the ring and cutting you down and virtually everything he's saying is right, because that's the thing, MJF is more successful than these other three guys because he's better than them. And so when you have someone like Jungle Boy saying that Max didn't earn his opportunities or those kinds of things, it just doesn't ring true. It comes off hollow and shallow. So I think getting away from that, focusing more on personal issues, doing what they did with Darby tonight, will go a long way in making this feel like a legitimate title match that they can actually put on pay-per-view.
All right, well said. Let's pause and introduce the show, introduce ourselves, give out the info for people to participate who are listening to us live, and then get to our first VIP Priority Express caller and some other calls and emails and a lot more to talk about from the show, including Chris Jericho and Keith Lee in the main event. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, April 12th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, a 35-year veteran pro wrestling journalist who started the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter when I was in high school at age 16, and I've covered professional wrestling as my job ever since being in college and graduating from college. And I have covered wrestling through various forms of media, including using a typewriter to type up my first newsletters and white out whenever I made typos. Oh, my God. And 900 lines during that period.
You ever
period.
Think about going back to that just for...
You know what? No. I think my younger self could type more accurately than me now. So it could be a bit of a disaster. The pace of my job back then was similar to the pace of Keith Lee versus Chris Jericho. And the pace of my job now is similar to Darby Allin and Swerve Strickland. And I just think a lot of other things would get pushed aside as I typed away. Oh, someday I'm going to talk about what it was like to try to format, you know, because I didn't just type start to finish. This is a whole sidebar. I didn't just start at the beginning and type to the end. Like, I had to fit in columns and letters to the editor, and people would snail mail. I don't know if people even know that term anymore. But, you know, mail through the Postal Service, match reports that I would get like a week later, and then I would type them up and then mail them out a week later. You wouldn't know what happened at MSG for 2 weeks back then. But, you know, I'd have to type it up and fit everything in and fill the pages. It was very different. I was very, very excited to get my first Macintosh. That changed everything.
Not to get too far off the beaten path here, but it struck me because I just happened to see today. We've got so here in Maine we have a well-known local music chain, and they're actually a record store chain that they're actually responsible for creating Record Store Day, which is now a national thing. And Record Store Day is coming up, and the owner of the company, every year he does this big preview show where he basically runs down all of the releases. And this year, so they posted it to YouTube for years, but this year, as a little change of pace, he decided to go all analog. So he recorded it to cassette tapes.
Yeah.
And they're sending the cassette tapes with his preview podcast show out to people who request them. So that all is to say, what if, you know, for old time's sake, you do one of those classic newsletters with the whiteout and everything, you know, just to throw it back.
Well, and speaking of which, when I did the radio show at KFAN in the early 90s, which was this major 50,000 watt sports station, it was the second sports station, it was the second old sports station in the country. And I would, you know, interview big names, and it was like a really fun show, really cool show. VIP members can hear pretty much the whole library of those shows when they go VIP. They're all in our hundreds of radio shows from the 90s in our big library. And we would edit down the shows, which usually ran 2 hours. We edit them down to 60 or 90 minutes and send them out with me recording an analog like introduction to people who subscribed to what we called Torch Tapes. So we would send out monthly Torch Tapes with the best of the previous 4 weeks of radio shows. And they would get mailed in padded envelopes and people would listen. And that was some of the earliest forms of almost, you know, podcast distribution in the sense that you didn't need a radio, you just need a cassette player to hear what we had done on the radio. So I'd forgot, you know, hadn't thought about that in a while, Brandon. So we've been doing this a long time. And of course through websites and now podcast, you know, tons of podcasting. And if you're not a VIP member, you're missing out on a lot of what I do, including earlier today, I did the Ask the Editor version of the Wade Keller Hotline with an eclectic mix of questions from VIP members, talked for 35, 40 some minutes, and gave longer form answers to those, including thoughts on Cameron Grimes, Cody Rhodes. Oh God, I don't even remember now the list of topics we covered. But now it's driving me nuts. What else did I talk about? All right, let's look. Could Stephanie or Shane McMahon buy back WWE if Vince dies and they end up with all his money? That was kind of fun to explore. Should Tony Khan rein in wrestlers' unscripted promos, given that there's been something said that they had to scold people for or go, you know, ask them not to do that anymore? Also talk about CM Punk and MJF as a possibility at Wembley or otherwise, and Trish's heel turn, Conan, and more. So covered a lot of topics there. You can go VIP and hear that along with all the other VIP exclusive shows like Everything with Rich and Wade, which we recorded yesterday, and The Fix with Todd Martin, which will be simulcast as the free Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast flagship tomorrow. So much more VIP exclusive content in podcast format with not only shows that I'm part of, but shows that our whole team is part of with special niche formats. And also our weekly newsletter. Continue to publish it. Paper copies go out every week, and we have a digital PDF and all text version for VIP members. So check out details on all the benefits of VIP membership, including the aforementioned hundreds of retro radio shows from the 1990s and 20 years of podcasts, thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of hours probably, maybe millions of hours or billions of hours. I don't know. I haven't done the math. Who's to say? Who really could ever know? But they're all there. And when you sign up, you get access to them. pwtorch.com/govip. We actually, as part of our podcast feed, just to make it simple for you on your podcast app, on your phone, we run 18 years ago a podcast from our original series starting in the early 2000s. So you can subscribe to that feed and listen to my insider backstage news reporting on what was going on back in 2005. And you can catch up on the shows that we did in 2004 and 2003 too. So lots of cool perks outside of just the normal current day analysis. And there's certainly plenty of that too. So pwtorch.com/govip, pwtorch.com/govip. We'd love for you to be a member, and I think you'll really enjoy the service. All right. The other voice you've heard is Brandon LeClaire. I almost called you Brandon Cutler. Had to catch myself from PWTorch.com. He covers pay-per-views, AEW and WWE pay-per-views, and participates not only as a co-host on these shows, but also occasionally on our VIP exclusive post-PLEN pay-per-view roundtables. Brandon, I'm talking fast because we're running long here before we get to our callers, but welcome. Good to have you back in the co-host chair.
Yeah, glad to be here. I don't often do the AEW post shows, so it's cool to switch it up a little bit and join you for this.
I always like when you're on. It's good hearing you talk AEW in addition to when you're on the WWE shows. Okay, so if you're live streaming our show, please give us a call. If you have something to say, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. That will flag you on the switchboard so we know you want to be brought on. Otherwise, you can just call and listen and decide as the show flows if you want to be part of it and hit 1. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Just a reminder that tomorrow, Todd Martin will be my co-host on the flagship. So be sure to hit download on our blue feed, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast feed. Okay, let's get to our calls. We got VIP Express caller, VIP Priority caller, Chris from Mount Pearl, Newfoundland. Chris, welcome. Good to hear from you again. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Gentlemen, good evening. Interesting show. Entirely predictable in terms of a match result standpoint. But I thought almost everybody just knocked it out of the park with the non-match stuff tonight. I mean, don't get me wrong. The Darby Allin match and the Swerve match. And then even the there was another match that I thought was good. Oh, the Orange Cassidy match were both enjoyable.
Yeah.
Orange Cassidy doing something that seems to have been a lost art in AEW, something called selling. I believe that's something they used to do in wrestling. I don't know. I don't see much of it anymore. But I thought Kenny cut a really chilling promo, and we have not seen that from him at all in AEW in the entire 3 years he's been there. And just to see him get serious and get cold and almost to a scary point of seriousness is very refreshing, and I really hope this is the start of turning away from goofy Kenny and giving us the serious best bout machine that I've been missing since he left New Japan. So, I don't know, you haven't mentioned that yet. I don't know what you thought of that little promo he cut.
Oh, it's on my list. I mean, there's good wrestling and good promos on this show, and that might have been my favorite Kenny Omega promo in AEW, and maybe that's of all time. He was serious, and he seemed like a serious person, and it seemed like he had thought through what he wanted to say, which hasn't always been the case. I'm going to compliment him by throwing a lot of shade here. But he just hasn't seemed to be prioritizing that. There was, I will say, a vibe he gave off of, I am the great 7-star Kenny Omega, best bout machine, Tokyo Dome, Tokyo Dome, Tokyo Dome, IWGP, IWGP. Worship me. I'm here to entertain you, and you're paying to see me. Okay, so that's the vibe he gave off, and then he was beat down and hurt, I think mentally and physically, and wasn't his best self, and it didn't work most of the time. There were a few times it worked spectacularly. He was really good, but he just wasn't as consistent. I don't think he did a lot to build a new fan base. I think that there was this inherited fan base who knew his work. They're excited to be able to see him regularly. But he didn't seem to be working really hard to go, hey, here's who I am. Let me introduce you to another million or so people, and let me earn your respect and not just have you, you know, think about my reputation or, you know, the buzz and my rep coming in. And the effort just didn't seem to be there. This was the most direction that he had, and I really, really liked serious look into the camera and speak, like, really – like coherent on point thoughts, including acknowledging the elephant in the living room, which is Don Callis is an idiot, is a jerk. He's a sleazebag. Why should we care that he's hurt? And Kenny acknowledged it. He's like, yeah, he's not an easy guy to like, but he's family. It's like, you know what? We can all relate to that. There's people in our lives, families or old friends who aren't particularly sympathetic people, but they're family and you stand by them. And that's kind of what I'm looking for with this stuff is if you got the sleazebag hanging out with you, let's acknowledge he's a sleazebag, but, you know, say forgive him because I vouched for him. He shouldn't seem that bad to you. I liked it. I mean, he just seems vibrant. He seems healthy, you know, physically, cosmetically. He's clearly in a better place than he was a year or two ago. And I'm looking forward to what 2023 has, what he has to give us in 2023 here. It just feels like a more serious, more professional Kenny Omega, and yeah, I like I said, I threw some shade his way, leading to even more compliments, but this is what I've always hoped he had in him, an alpha character who looked like he was taking this seriously, and that was what we got tonight. Brandon, your thoughts?
Yeah, I was really encouraged by what we saw tonight from Kenny. I think that one of my chief criticisms of AEW, and I think one of the shortcomings that I don't want to say necessarily that they didn't account for, because I think part of it was Kenny's own doing, and that either he wasn't, like you kind of alluded to, Wade, he wasn't taking himself seriously, or he didn't want to be at the forefront, or whatever the case may be, injured, working hurt. Of course, he had some time off there because of the injuries in there. So a bunch of different factors, but that all is to say, when AEW became a reality, I thought that it was going to be a promotion centered around introducing best bout machine, Japan Kenny Omega, to a national American audience on national television and making him the focal point of the company. And there has never been a point in AEW's history thus far where you could really say that that's the Kenny Omega we've seen. Even when Kenny had the run at the top of the company as AEW champion, a lot of it was marred by comedy. A lot of it was the heel shtick, the over-the-top stuff with Don Callis, with Brandon Cutler, with Michael Nakazawa. All of that stuff just feels undercard to me, and it's part of the reason why I wish he would kind of get away from it even now. But I'm encouraged by the promos that he's cutting, the program that he's now in, the fact that they're putting him up against these vicious, vicious heels in the Blackpool Combat Club. And by the way, I don't think that there are many people that would boo the BCC, even with them being this violent and this nasty. I don't think there's many characters on the AEW roster that would elicit boos from, you know, up against those guys other than the Young Bucks and specifically Kenny Omega. So I think it's a really good pairing to have them there, and I think it serves two masters. One, it helps the BCC get their desired reaction, and two, and maybe even more importantly, it forces Kenny Omega to be a serious main event act.
Chris, back to you.
Yeah, I mean, I could go on for hours about the EVPs and how I think they were just so terrified of being seen as Triple H that they kept themselves away from anything resembling a title for far too long. Cody just completely wrote himself out of it, and I think that really hurt AEW in the early going, and they're still trying to recover from it. You know, yes, there's the desire to keep the people in power away from titles and the perception that they're booking themselves to win. Hi, Dusty. But there's also the fact that these are your most talented performers, and if you don't put them at the top of your card, then you're doing yourself a disservice. So it was a catch-22 all along. Before I forget, you were talking about typewriters earlier, and I used to cover pay-per-views for another website, which I will not mention. But Wade, I'd like to see if you could cover the Commander versus Hijo del Vikingo match on a typewriter. Just see if you can handle that. Because I remember trying to cover the Machine Guns and the Young Bucks in the early days of Impact, even on a keyboard, and I ended up with cramps more times than I'd care to count. So doing that on a typewriter would be hilarious.
My pay-per-view coverage experience back in the day was so different because I would have a bunch of friends over. We'd have a snack table. It was like this group of regulars, and then, you know, various people would show up every now and then. And it was a blast. Joe would sit there and order the giant cheese pizza and eat the whole thing. And, I mean, it was just like, it was just such a tradition. And everybody just had a great time, and I would just sit there with my yellow notepad and pen and take notes. And then I would, that night, you know, record a 900 number sometimes for people who didn't see the pay-per-view and didn't have access to it. And then I would type it up, like, the next day and mail it out. But it was just notes, like, you know, high points in the match. And the match reports were so much less detailed, but it was more, you know, what's the story they told and what are the key moves, what worked, what didn't. But, yeah, now, you know, we just have the freedom. And if you've got some typing speed, you can kind of really convey what happened in a match. Brandon knows about this well and the challenges that come along with it. But, yeah, I cannot – it's frustrating enough to have a typo and have to hit the back key. I can't imagine having to get the whiteout, wait, you know, blow on it to draw, and then resume typing in the middle of the match. That'd be crazy. So, anyway.
Man, that sounds like the life, doing it on a notepad. I remember, because I'm a perfectionist, trying to keep up with the likes of the Machine Guns and Triple X and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just going, this is not happening. But I couldn't let myself not do it. I had to try, and the readers then expected it, and yeah, you know what it's like. I still don't care about the Hardys. Like, okay, it's great. Jeff Hardy's back. Hopefully he's got his head in a good space now. When I say I don't care about them, I mean as acts. The only person who looked worse on TV tonight than Matt Hardy was Keith Lee. And Keith Lee just reminded me of that meme of Samuel L. Jackson in the white muscle shirt looking confused on TV. Like, why are you putting this man in the main event on a national TV show? But Jeff has lost several steps. Matt, I don't know that he had enough steps to lose. why are we still trotting these guys out there? Can we not find something better to put on TV? I know they still get a pop. I know they're still over, but I don't want to see it.
Sunk cost? Keith Lee was hired without... It is, yeah. Well, but it is sometimes describes human behavior. The sunk cost fallacy. I mean, there's nothing that's happened with Keith Lee and AEW surprised people in WWE, including his friends, who were, disappointed that he wasn't going to become the star that he had a chance to be. That was a clunker. That was, that was a match that maybe you want to watch on 2x speed, like you might listen to audiobooks in, and then, it might seem like a normal match. Yeah, that was, on paper, it looked like a challenge. I give Jericho credit for, doing what he could, but it was mostly, Lee walking around the ring slowly and throwing some punches and not really selling. I mean, the moonsault's damn impressive. I mean, that he can still do that off the second rope. But, after he threw Danny Garcia in the ring, he had to hold on to the top rope because he was so winded. And by the way, I'd be winded too if I did what Keith Lee did. But that's his profession. His job is to not be blown up in a slow-mo match. His job is to stay in really, good enough shape. And you can be in great shape at any size. Like Crusher Jerry Blackwell's like maybe my favorite wrestler of all time. He was such a big part of my childhood watching him. And he was in fantastic shape, one of the great bump takers. But he was big. He was built at 400-plus pounds. But you got to be able to move to keep yourself and your opponent safe and to entertain the fans. And Keith Lee's gimmick was something other than what he does now. He's very limited. And the last couple times he tried to do what he used to do well, it didn't go, smoothly. So, yeah, it's a bummer. Brandon, how do you feel about Keith Lee tonight? And how do you feel about the Hardys, and in particular Jeff Hardy being back? But in general, the Hardys, as Chris is lamenting, just being part of AEW in the way that they are.
Yeah, I'll get the negative out of the way first, because I largely agree with everything said about Keith Lee. I think that, much like WWE, he's been a disappointment in AEW. I enjoyed his work with Swerve Strickland as a tag team. I didn't think it was all great by any means, but I think that, where Keith is at this point in his career, I think having a smaller guy who can bump around for him and sort of he can be the heavy and tag in and out, I think that behooves him, and it works really well. So if they think that there's still mileage left with Keith Lee, I really think another pairing in the same vein as the Swerve Strickland tag team is the best place for him at this point. Because, he unfortunately just didn't really have business being in a long main event singles match on Dynamite against an older guy like Chris Jericho, who, try as he may in that situation, is not someone who's going to be bumping around a bunch for someone like Keith Lee. So it was definitely a clunker and a hard note to close the show on. As far as the Hardys go, I think that this is a great thing for Matt Hardy, because Matt immediately gets lost without Jeff. I don't think that he really has a place as a single star within AEW. I think the roster is so full that he winds up in this lower mid-card fodder. He's mixed up with Private Party again and with Ethan Page and Stokely Hathaway and that bunch, which never seems to really get off the ground. I just don't think there is any mobility for Matt when it comes to a singles run in AEW. So having his brother back, having Jeff Hardy back is a huge deal. As far as Jeff goes, it's so hard. You don't want to wish ill on this guy who has very real and very legitimate struggles. But at this point, we've seen this enough times that I think it's fair to honestly wonder whether or not being in this environment is good for Jeff Hardy. And that's what I worry about. At the end of the day, it's his decision, and it's not our decision
to make.
Yeah.
Of
course, yeah. But at this point, I just, you can say this time is different, but we've said that every time, and it hasn't been different. So at some point, someone has to throw in the towel. Somebody has to say, this isn't responsible, and this guy may not be right for this business anymore. And I don't know when that point is.
Yeah, and having Matt, you know, who's displayed publicly traits of an enabler or an excuse maker, mm-hmm. and it could have been PR, and maybe he's really hard on him, you know, otherwise. But, you know, sometimes Matt making excuses for Jeff can lead to fans encouraging Jeff to continue on a course that, as you say, Brandon, is not good for him. And so you have Matt sort of the level-headed one, although, you know, he's had his issues and he's come out of it. You know, he's come out the other side and been a productive veteran and contributed a lot. I don't think Matt's helping by being that enabler and excuse maker for Jeff. If this is going to lead to more issues and, you know, I would say, oh, I trust Matt to know what's best for Jeff, but I'm not sure that I do. I mean, just don't know enough. You know, it's not that I'm skeptical, but I'm not like definitively saying this isn't the best thing for Jeff. Maybe he's just sitting around miserable and he needs to be around and they're doing some things that are really going to try to hold Jeff in check and, you know, not going to let him drive and they're going to, you know, have essentially a babysitter and Jeff is begging people to keep an eye on him and make sure he doesn't do anything wrong. I mean, there are adjustments you can make, but you know, you don't want to go into this without a diligent plan and, you know, precautionary measures. And I think that's all we can hope for in terms of what's happening with his, you know, circle of friends and family. And then in case of Tony Khan, being a responsible boss and, you know, keeping a close eye on him. You don't want him on payroll doing something bad that he could not have done had you not brought him in and put him in this situation. Chris, back to you.
Yeah, I don't know about trusting Matt with Jeff's safety. The last couple of times Jeff's been in trouble, Matt has rushed to his defense and then had to backpedal furiously.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm a little iffy on that front. My only other point, In 2 months, 2 weeks, and 2 days, but who's counting, I will be in the fifth row of Forbidden Door. I'm flying 3 hours to Toronto mm-hmm. because there's 0% chance I was missing New Japan wrestlers this close to me. Do we have any feeling how this is going to go from here? Spoiler alert for those of you who haven't seen Sakura Genesis yet. We've got a new champ there who could potentially come in and face someone on the AEW side. We've got Okada free to face MJF. I never knew how much I wanted to see that match. But do we think that's something that we can start to predict? Because like, I'm just looking forward to seeing Ospreay and all that stuff. So I will I'll leave you folks on that one.
I appreciate it, Chris. Good hearing from you, as always. I, in a way, it is a little too early. You know, there's a lot to do in the next 2 months, 2 weeks, and 2 days before we get there. And it is going to be more novelty match based, I suspect. I think it's going to be, hey, here's a top star from AEW, top star from New Japan. Tune in to see that because it's novel. I don't think it's going to take over television for a long stretch of time to build backstories. I think the 2 weeks leading up to it, they'll, you know, cram, you know, a few things in. But they learned last year they can do a good buy rate. You know, they can do good numbers on pay-per-view with just enough fans like you, Chris, who don't want to miss first time, perhaps one time only matchups, dream card matchups that, you know, you back in the day you'd read about in the pro wrestling magazines where they would fantasize about, you know, the top WWF champion facing the NWA champion or AWA champion and the top tag team from one territory facing another. And there were matches that, you know, you thought might never happen. And so they would write articles, exploring the possibility of them. And this is a super card again of that. So, but you know, they've got some fresh matchups and I think a pretty healthy roster on the AEW side to bring a lot of talent on board. But it's pretty early to get too deep into you know what the lineup will be. Brandon, any thoughts on this?
Not yet. I just keep thinking about, you know, all the inter-promotional shows that they appear to be attempting to book. I mean, there is, of course, Forbidden Door, but then the early chatter about All In seems to suggest that that's going to be some sort of supercard of sorts, just because, you know, people are assuming that if they want to maximize their ability to fill Wembley Stadium, or sell, you know, whatever they're set up to capacity for, that they're going to want to have, you know, talent from elsewhere, especially British talent. So it's hard to say. I don't really have any sort of inkling one way or the other about where they may be going.
Yeah. All right, cool. So the main event match, Jericho and Keith Lee, didn't get much hype on the TV show. And I think it should have. I know there's not a lot that they could say about it because it there's not a ton of backstory to it. But, it's an interesting show, and it moved swiftly, and there were good matches and good promos. I just, when the match came around, I mean, I remember it was a distinctive main event because it's so novel, you know, for an intra AEW matchup. But I just think AEW ought to do more to get us invested in that match other than Excalibur doing the heavy lifting in the opening minutes of the match. I think that a lot about all main events. WWE does a much better job lately than they used to do in that regard with a little backstage segment. You know, you get Heyman talking about Solo and his match or whatever. It just wasn't that tonight, and, you know, I don't see a compelling reason not to. I think whatever you think you're going to lose in viewers because you're going to an interview, which I don't buy as a thing to worry about, you're going to gain in having people more invested in the match. And I just don't really know if we had any sense of what the stakes were or how these two wrestlers felt about it based on tonight's show. And I don't know if that's a strategic call or Tony just thinks everybody remembers things as well as he does, and they're thinking about it all week, and they're just naturally as invested, so why waste their time when you can be doing moves in the ring, talking about it? Brandon, your thoughts on that topic?
Yeah, I think generally speaking, AEW has a breathing issue, and it sounds funny to say, but like I don't think that they
so did
often...
Keith Lee in the main event rimshot.
I don't think that they often allow their match their promotion to breathe enough, in the sense that they're so focused on cramming as much as they can into these shows to make them seem full and to give the in-ring talent more time, that it often feels like they're moving too quickly from one thing to the next. And so, yeah, naturally, when you're doing that, it tends to it tends to limit their ability to provide additional stakes to TV matches, because while they could be focused on hyping Jericho and Keith Lee, they're busy already talking about Rampage or already talking about next week's Dynamite, or they're trying to fit in another match, or in the lead up to, you know, in the aftermath of the Keith Lee and Jericho match, instead of letting the result breathe, they're already moving on to the next show very, very quickly. So it's something they do a lot. They're so quick to move on from segment to segment and try to cram so much in that it often feels like everything winds up sort of on an even playing field and nothing feels more important than the previous segment.
Okay, let's read an email here from Zach in Texas to kick off emails, and we'll still take calls too. Because this is a couple things we've been talking about. Gentlemen, another great episode of Dynamite in the books. Darby and Swerve had a great match, but man, the post-match promo. They've been telling a consistent story of all other pillars being unwilling to compromise their beliefs like MJF. Darby got real tonight, and then there's Sting. He's still so good. I'm so grateful that he's going to get to write this final chapter after WWE squandered him. Part of me was hoping that Sting would challenge MJF to a match, but it's all good. Okay, so I want to pause there. When Sting came out and got in MJF's face, and Todd Martin has talked about this on The Fix, that there's a match and I think someone else brought it up recently too, the idea of getting a pay-per-view match or a big TV main event or actually treating Battle of the Belts as a big deal, you know, a Sting-MJF match. And I think about what might be at Wembley and who might mean something to sell tickets. And somebody like Sting, who says it's coming to an end soon, Showtime's coming to an end, but it's transferring to Derby. He didn't say it's over. If I recall his wording correctly, could we see that Sting MJF match as that big novelty of this legend, perhaps saying if I beat MJF, I'll retire as champion, or I'll defend the title with honor, one or the other. But if I lose, then, you know, that'll be it for me. They could, you know, put a retirement stake at it. And what a cool setting for Sting's last, quote unquote, it's pro wrestling, but maybe what's billed as and intended to be, hopefully, his last match. And that would be a time wise, keep MJF in the mix with Darby after whatever they do with the pillars between now and then. Brandon, your thoughts on that particular option?
It crossed my mind as he was cutting that promo, because you've got to go with you've got to have a unique and you've got to have a special card for All In. And I don't know if you have a title challenger right now, providing MJF is still the champion, which I presume he will be. I don't think you have a title challenger right now that really feels like a massive, massive main event match. I mean, like, they just signed Jay White. I don't think that they're going to be quite there with him yet. He's also a heel, so I presume that they're not going to put him in that position yet. We've seen Moxley. We've seen Hangman. You know, we've seen most of those challengers. So instead of reaching for big money, excellent in-ring match for the world title at All In, you might be better served with a spectacle like an MJF and Sting match. And for Sting to have a big, you know, career closing moment at Wembley is where there's a lot of history, and there's, you know, and Sting is as historical a figure as he is. I think it might be a good idea. Now, I should preface that by saying that there has to be a signature AEW match sharing the top of the card with them. So if they're going to do that, they've got to have a big time main event level wrestling match. So, you know, if it's Kenny Omega and Jay White, or if it's, heck, you know, it's been thrown around that the Elite versus CM Punk and FTR, that would certainly qualify too. Something of that caliber to offset sort of the spectacle nature of Sting and MJF.
Yeah, yeah, totally agree. And I think they can present, you know, a diversified lineup. And I think Sting MJF would fill a certain niche. And I think there's a lot of people in Europe who have been following Sting's career and would see that as not only a last chance to see Sting, but to see Sting in a super cool setting against a top guy in the current day with the stakes being high. And, you know, ideally, you know, in our imaginations here, a really good build as something that they get that the United States doesn't get, you know, I mean, that would almost be seen as a bit of a steal. And I think, you know, MJF can have classic matches with people who are younger than in their 60s. But I think he can have a good match and tell a really good story with Sting, and it would be so different. And the rest of the show can be, you know, loaded quite a bit with really good matches. But you can, you know, good matches, you know, are not hard to find these days. The show had several of them. You know, I mean, that's not what's going to sell tickets. It's a good thing to have as just a base ingredient in your product that people can rely on, no question. But to make something really stand out and be special in that size stadium, Sting MJF jumps out as one of those. And yes, there's definitely some other big matches they can do.
I mean, if you're going into that show with Sting MJF and CM Punk and FTR against the Elite sharing co-billing as the main event, I think that for starters, it keeps the headlines of the show in-house, which I think is really important, because they're going to do Forbidden Door in June. We're already going to have the cross-promotion show. AEW has such a massive roster. I would love to see that big stadium show be focused primarily on AEW talent, at least in the main event picture. And so, yeah, I mean, that's all in-house guys, and I think it would be – I think you can co-bill with those two matches and feel like a really big and special show.
Yeah. All right, back to Zach's email. He says, Buddy Matthews and Orange Cassidy put on a fantastic match. They've done a good job building up a title that was looked at as an afterthought. It's so Brandon has become the TV title. And I just wish they'd call it that, because then it's, you know, and have some parameters around, you know, who gets title shots and how it's decided, and make it different than the TNT title and the AEW world title. So it has some sort of, you know, defined meaning, some framework. But that said, Orange Cassidy is just one week after another putting on really good matches. His selling was great. He broke his hand. You know, I mean, of course I'm a little, conditioned to believe that after some stuff going on with the Minnesota Timberwolves and broken hands from punch walls and punching opponents in the chest and stuff. So, but I was like, oh, he just broke a knuckle and he was in pain. So then, of course, when Buddy stomped his hand, I'm like, okay, it's a work. You got me, and good for you. That was really good stuff. And yeah, Orange Cassidy is doing. He is the workhorse right now, and you know Tony Khan loves him, and he's super respected in the locker room. Everybody's, you know, no, even people who have issues with his you know slow-mo gimmick. Speaking of the Timberwolves, Kyle Anderson, he does not. He is just like he's going out there and earning the reputation that he already had with a new fan base who are seeing him do that work, and it's pretty special because he's not super young. Like this is going to be one of the defining stretches of his career is this series of really good matches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think he's been really impressive. In fact, back when they initially introduced this idea of a big fatal four way for MJF's title, and they were talking up these three pillars beside MJF. My thought was, if you want a good underdog story and a really intriguing world title matchup, I think you're looking in the wrong place. I don't think it's Darby or Sammy Guevara or Jungle Boy. It's Orange Cassidy. I mean, he is more over than the other three. He is consistently in really, really strong TV matches on a regular basis. And I think that he has a connection with the crowd that supersedes the connection of those other three guys. And that's not to say those guys aren't over themselves. I mean, certainly Darby Allin has a strong connection with the crowd. I just think that Orange Cassidy has been the most impressive of the bunch and certainly deserves to be in the conversation with the rest of those pillars. So I think that they've since course corrected, and I feel a little bit more comfortable in the direction that they're going, but I do not rule out the idea of seeing a really good program with MJF and Orange Cassidy if they want to go that route. But in the meantime, Cassidy doing these weekly title defenses is a lot of fun.
Very much so. All right. Up next, he says, it's nice seeing Jeff Hardy back and looking happy, healthy, and in good shape. I will say he looked all those things. You know, I mean, he looked like he's in good shape. You know, you don't want to take your shirt off and be like, whoa, put your shirt back on. And that was not an issue with Jeff. So, you know, I guess an optimistic sign, or that's a reason to be optimistic, I guess, if you're looking for that. And then he says, by far my favorite part of the night was the serious Kenny promo and the surprise return of the Elite. The feud is firing on all cylinders. Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that. The Blackpool Combat Club, I'm still skeptical anybody wants to boo them, but they're being nasty enough and going all in with it. And they're against, you know, the Bucks and Kenny, who now are being portrayed more clearly as baby faces in how they're acting, how they're talking in Kenny's case. And then just, you know, how they're acting, you know, although I was going to say coming to the defense of their friends, but like Kenny sure took his time coming out to help poor Brandon Cutler and Michael Nakazawa. Maybe it'd be good to have a little explanation for why he waited so long to come help them, but and the Bucks too. But nevertheless, Brandon, your thoughts on that feud?
Yeah, I kind of like what we touched on earlier. I think that it's really important for Kenny Omega to have a big, significant, major feud in a situation where he is set up to have to get serious and to rely less on the comedy stuff with Don Callis and Nakazawa and Cutler. And I think this is it. I think that being against a group as violent and forceful as the Blackpool Combat Club forces Kenny Omega to take things more seriously. I think that bore out in his promo tonight backstage, and then him showing up a little later on. I think it's all a net positive overall. I do agree, kind of like what I alluded to earlier, that I think it is very hard for Blackpool Combat Club to get booed. People naturally really like those guys, especially Moxley and Bryan Danielson. I think that pairing them up against the Elite is probably one of the only chances they have of it actually taking off, just because they are such revered characters, especially Kenny Omega. So I think if they are going to get booed against anyone, it's going to be those guys. But they definitely have to be careful, because I mean, I'm watching this show and I'm enjoying what the BCC are doing. I mean, they're just violent guys who like to beat people up. They're not healing on the fans. They're not being overtly nasty in a verbal sense. They just want to fight and they want to beat you down and show that they are better than you. And so on its face, that can certainly be a heel gimmick. But when the composition of the group is made up of wrestlers who the fans really naturally like, naturally gravitate towards, and naturally want to cheer, I think that you're going to have a hard time getting the desired reaction in most scenarios.
And then Zach closes the email with this line: as much as you relish burying Keith Lee, I don't think you can do that tonight. Wrong. That match with Jericho was good. Wrong. Lee is just a different kind of athlete. True. In an interview with Fightful, he said he didn't train to do a moonsault. He just did it. That's the kind of guy Keith Lee is. True. Brandon, was that a good match?
No. No, it wasn't. And I mean, again, I don't want to get on Keith Lee too much, but I think that if they feel like there's still something to get out of him at this stage of his career, it should be in a Swerve Strickland-esque tag team.
Yeah, yeah. I think in a tag situation, it's better. And I don't relish being up on Keith Lee. I mean, I don't delight in it. I just, you know, as CM Punk said, tell me when I'm lying. You know, tell me when I'm wrong. I mean, has not what I said about Keith Lee early on when he arrived about the concerns, you know, turned out to be true? I mean, like, I'm not here to sugarcoat things. Just because he was an indie darling and had good matches at one time doesn't mean, you know, we can't see with our own eyes a lot of what was a concern of even friends of his who were rooting for him in WWE, and why they said, you know, Tony Khan, you know, should be, you know, hopefully he's aware of this, of what he's getting, and maybe Keith Lee would be in a different circumstance different. But yeah, Keith Lee could have been. He is a special talent. He's a special athlete, and he's distinct on his promos in a way that I think can really be good. But he has not been underutilized. He has been properly utilized based on you know, what he's bringing, Tony Khan, and that's too bad because you know, with some changes, he could have been a much more valuable, you know, top tier player for them. And I think some people were still holding out hope that that's the Keith Lee they were going to get. And I mean, I think it's gotten a little worse, not better, in terms of him being able to live up to, just, you know, from a physical professional athlete performance standpoint, what his reputation was, you know, not that many years ago. Mm-hmm. All right. I didn't relish saying that. I'm just being honest, just trying to not BS. Okay. JB in Detroit says, hi team. At first I was going to complain about how long the Darby Swerve match went, but that went out the window with the Darby MJF promo following the match. MJF was masterful in building Darby up while also being an absolute dick about it and refusing to let the fans cheer him. Meanwhile, Darby cut the classic white meat babyface promo based on honor and morals, except it actually got over and cheered in the year 2023. What goes around comes around. I'll admit that the Sting stuff was weird, with pom-poms, references to Cody, Ric Flair, Kevin Nash, and Scott Hall, but I guiltily still found it entertaining. You shouldn't feel guilty. There was a lot of good stuff in that. I was surprised they gave the match and subsequent angle 36 minutes of the show. Not that it was bad. I just wouldn't have guessed that looking at the card pre-show. So, yeah, anything to add what JB said about that segment, including how long it went? Do you think it went too long, or did it have just the right amount of time, except maybe you'd edit a couple things Sting said?
Yeah, I mean, a couple edits to Sting aside, tighten that up a little bit, get him on a cleaner train of thought. I think other than that, it pretty much worked. Like I mentioned earlier, this was my favorite part of the show. So I'm fine with it getting a fair amount of time. So yeah, I mean, I don't think I'd really take anything away. I can't think of anything else on the show that really felt like it needed a significant increase in time. I mean, and they also could have shaved time off of Keith Lee and Jericho, and then you're left with even more. So yeah, I think you keep it where it is.
All right, up next, was the Juice J promo a good enough follow-up from the big show opening angle from last week? And I'm glad we're getting to this. I know we got another email on this too, at least one more. Was it good enough? You know what? Well, I was going to jump the other email, but I won't. I'll just throw to you, and then we'll add another dimension when I get to the other email.
It was fine. I don't think that they – I think that they created enough intrigue to, you know, at least keep me invested going forward. But I think, you know, with a debut as big as Jay White, that it wouldn't have been a bad idea to have him cut a live promo. I mean, even if it's just backstage with Renee, I think that a talent that big, a signing that big, I don't know that first week out of the gate after his big debut that you just do a pretty simple video package.
Yeah, I just think, what are people going to think about Jay White who have heard about him or not heard about him, but aren't established big fans of his and, mm-hmm. and understanding what he brings to the table? What mm-hmm. was, you know, was that the right follow-up? Now, I think you watch me and you go, okay, this guy's got, he can talk, he's got distinct voice, distinct accent, he's confident. And I think you're left going, I want to know more about him, I want to learn more about him, I want to hear more from him. But I don't think you know a lot about him. And then, you know, there's the argument, and I mean, I don't know the answer to it, but I know there's – I think it's reasonable to say if you start dwelling on Bullet Club, it's starting to be like wearing an Affliction t-shirt a few years ago.
Yeah.
It's like it was so cool, and everybody did it, and now if you're still doing it, it's like, really? You know, it's just – I don't know. So I don't know that building – AEW's, you know, having AEW be the home of Bullet Club Gold. I mean, I'm glad they differentiated it. I don't hate the idea, and I'm not saying it can't work. I just, there absolutely is part of me that just thinks, would it be better for Jay White to just be AEW Jay White in a way that's, you know, more likely the way that Vince McMahon would have promoted him or Paul Levesque, for that matter, would promote him, which is, you're here now, and let's figure out how to best utilize you for our audience with our formula and our roster and the way we do things, instead of, oh, we're so glad to be able to bring, you know, this gimmick from overseas into our storyline. If they do a good job with it, it can still work. I just, to me, there's a risk of it feeling a little tired, hanging on too long, derivative. I don't know, you know, pick your slightly derisive adjective.
Yep. I agree. I think that it could be fine. I do like that they're differentiating as Bullet Club Gold. But I do think that at this point, Bullet Club has sort of been defined as something. And even if it can be a main event act, even if it can be a main event stable, I just think that AEW should want to define their wrestlers as their wrestlers. I don't know that you want to hang on to the past. And that doesn't mean that they can't make reference to Bullet Club. That doesn't mean that they can't celebrate its history. I just think that it's something that's been going on for so long. Like, I don't get the sense that there's a bunch of fans out there clamoring for, oh man, it would be so cool if Bullet Club showed up in AEW. And 5, 6, 7 years ago, like, that's something people actually talked about. Like, people actually talked about the idea that Finn Balor or AJ Styles could bring Bullet Club to WWE. It was something that people were genuinely interested and invested in. I don't get the sense that there is a groundswell for that anymore. It's more like people are interested and invested in Jay White. And yeah. So I think you just go to bat with Jay White, not the stable that he's associated with. Plus, they've already got plenty of stables, and half of them they don't really use or acknowledge all that frequently. So, yeah, I mean, I like Jay White. I think he is, at this point, above the Bullet Club stable. I also think that the association with Juice Robinson will hold him back to some extent. And that's not an indictment of Juice. I think that Juice is talented in his own right, but he's not Jay White. He's not he's not a contemporary to Jay White. He's beneath him.
Yeah, we'll get to that. It's kind of the topic of the email coming up here. But we'll stick with JB here and go to his third point, which is, where is this Christian Luchasaurus pairing going? The vignette tonight simply said something has changed. Could they become a tag team to challenge FTR or perhaps Jungle Boy and Hook? You know, I don't know if Christian is going to be super active in the ring. You know, it just depends on his physical condition. But this felt like it was the thing that's changed is Luchasaurus going from a kid's gimmick, a friendly gimmick, to this more sinister, evil heel Kane realm, or maybe they're going to try to, you know, pick up where the Fiend and Bray Wyatt left off and do some you know, things with him to try to pull you know, an audience that's into that stuff or wants that at least to be an ingredient in their pro wrestling formula. But yeah, and I mean, I like Christian's demeanor right now, and he's one of those just real reliable promo. You know, he's obviously better as a heel than he was as a babyface in AEW in terms of what he's saying and how he's carrying himself. And he's just that guy you can just count on to go out there and know what to say and how to say it and keep it within the narrative structure for the most part. And if he strays, usually there's a good defense for it, unlike, you know, Sammy Guevara, for instance, to pick on him a little, or Sting tonight. So yeah, I'm intrigued. And if Christian is mostly a spokesman for Luchasaurus and he works singles matches or they team up, I'm fine either way with that. Brandon, what's your inclination?
Yeah, I'm interested to see where it goes. I want to see what the plan is for Luchasaurus, because with a name like Luchasaurus, I think it's a little hard to be taken super, super seriously. and they've got it. Like Luchasaurus was great as a name and a gimmick for Jungle Boy, for Jurassic Express, for that team that they had. But if he's supposed to be, like you're alluding to, a Kane-like figure, I just think, you know, a guy that's supposed to be super scary being called Luchasaurus, it's a long name, for one, and two, you certainly have to get away from the notion that he's a guy who thinks he's a dinosaur, because you know, that is inherently not big and scary. So
I'm for a name change, because I don't like typing Luchasaurus. It's not great on the keyboard.
I was thinking that too. I think that there is work to do there. As far as Christian goes, I'm cool either way. I think that a tag team with Christian and Luchasaurus is very good. I mean, obviously, we know Christian is a very prolific tag team wrestler. I have no doubt that he would be very entertaining and still able to put together really solid matches with Luchasaurus. So I am good with that. I'm good with him more in a managerial role, with him coming out for singles matches every so often. But Christian is Christian's a huge asset for AEW, for any company he's in, really, if they're willing to use him in a way that is effective. And I think that AEW has done, by and large, a really, really good job with him.
We're talking about Jay White bringing the Bullet Club gimmick with him. Luchasaurus is kind of bringing a gimmick with him that wouldn't really be what you would do if you were just starting from scratch with him.
Right, right.
And I think it's worth evaluating, are there things worth inheriting and never explaining and just going with because X, Y, and Z happened X number of years ago in a completely different realm?
I mean, I watched him on Big Brother when he was before he was in a major company. I mean, he was an indie wrestler at the time, and he was a charismatic guy on Big Brother.
Yeah. Yep. All right. He asked about Jeff Hardy too, which we covered, so I won't read that because it's very much what we covered. But he goes, next, what's your opinion on Keith Lee embracing his new gray haired look? Does it make him look more older and does it make him look older or more distinguished? Well, you can do both. I think it makes him look older. I think it also makes him look distinguished. I thought he was channeling Kevin Nash tonight. Like, you know, I just
distinguished,
like,
in a good way though.
Yeah, I think there's a. I think there's a positive. I think he looks more distinguished. I don't know that he looks like a. I don't think it helps offset. I don't think it helps frame him as a serious athlete in his prime, but I think that it looks good on him. Like, I mean, if I saw him in a different part of the. You know, a different part of my life, and I'd be like, oh, that's a distinguished looking gray haired gentleman. Like, I don't think, like, what's that guy doing? And Kevin Nash embraced it and it worked for him. But, you know, would I advise him? Would I endorse it if I got a vote? I mean, probably not. Cause I mean, it does sort of send a message. I'm at the tail end of my, you know, athletic prime. Although one could, if one relished in taking digs at him, they could say, well, his matches already do that.
that's kind of the point I was getting at. Like, yeah. I think that Keith Lee in street clothes walking down the street. Yes, very distinguished gentleman. The gray beard and gray hair looks great on him. Keith Lee in a wrestling ring when he's already struggling, you know, to keep pace, and people are naturally floating toward the idea that he's past his prime and looking old and sluggish, I think the look contributes and sort of affirms your suspicions.
Yes. And then finally, JB says, so we're getting an Adam Cole Keith Lee versus Chris Jericho Danny Garcia match within the next few weeks, right? As always, I love the show, and everyone go VIP. Yeah, I mean, it seems like that's the case. You know, we talked about Jay White and his impact. What do you feel about how Adam Cole has been utilized since his return? You know, being the guy finishing big news statements from TK and now kind of coming out and helping Keith Lee. You know, it seems like that will lead to, you know, Cole against Garcia, Cole against Jericho singles matches. But, in you know, right now it looks does seem like we're headed towards that tag match.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine for one or two, you know, week program. I certainly, when I recommended earlier that I'd like to see Keith Lee in a tag team with a smaller guy who could move for him, that is definitely not Adam Cole. Long term, just because I think the upside with Adam Cole is significantly higher than that. But as a one-off or a two deal, yeah, I'm fine with that. And I think that Jericho is a good first program for Cole. I think that, you know, you can do that at Double or Nothing, presumably, and have a good match and get Cole a big win. I'm excited for Adam Cole to be moved into a more prominent position. And as I was thinking about it when we were talking about MJF and Sting earlier, I guess that is the match. If they're weary about going with more of a spectacle match with Sting, then I think the one match they have in their pocket right now that hasn't been done that they can build toward is MJF and Adam Cole, as far as their big money AEW style main event match, I think is MJF and Adam Cole. And I think I'm ready to see Cole in that spot. I mean, we saw it in NXT for a while. We saw it teased again in NXT a bit. He jumped ship over to AEW. They teased it a bit there, and then it never really came to fruition. And before you know it, he was out for a long period of time. So I'll be curious to see what the general perception is once AEW All Access wraps up, because Adam Cole is the focal point of that show.
Yeah.
And I think that All Access is going to garner the attention of some people who don't necessarily otherwise watch wrestling on a week-to-week basis. And I say that because Total Divas and Total Bellas was known for doing the same thing. And I realized that was solely focused on the women and probably had a little bit better exposure overall. But there's something to be said for likable people on reality shows just kind of doing their thing. And I think that Adam Cole certainly falls into that category. I think that there are going to be people who strongly get behind both he and Britt Baker. And we'll see if it translates to bigger reactions to you know, different turnouts in different cities. If it moves the needle at all, is what I would be interested to see. But I think that there's an opportunity to really solidify Adam Cole as a major top tier player for AEW, and I hope that's where he lands.
Yeah, I want to see the guys who have been around a while get used better, and I think we're seeing that with Kenny and Hex Sting. And now we're seeing an elevation of Darby and Jungle Boy and perhaps Sammy Guevara, although he's just sort of, you know, wedged in there because he's a pillar. If they could have left him out just because of the complications of the heel thing with MJF, they might have. You got MJF going strong. You have Blackpool Combat Club, especially Moxley being, you know, in a different situation now, which is fine, but you can always move him back to singles. Same with Bryan Danielson. But to have Jay White and Adam Cole back, even losing CM Punk and having Danielson kind of off doing his art instead of, you know, being a primary central money drawing top guy for AEW. And it's fine, you know, with how long he's been around, if he's not that. And I think AEW has enough other names to make that, even with some people being disappointing or just being hurt and not delivering, there's still some depth there. And I think Cole and now Jay White, Cole returning and Jay White being added, gives AEW just enough top guy depth where you're not lamenting other guys being wrapped up in tag or six, you know, 2-on-2 or 3-on-3 tag team feuds or underperforming or being underutilized. Like they're, you know, like, you know, people always go, you know, what could have been with Miro or, you know, what if Keith Lee had really, you know, shifted gears in a different way when he got to AEW, or if they had done a better job, frankly, with Claudio, you know, just saying, we're going to reframe him and get, you know, get if 6, 9, 12, 18 months out of him as a top guy before he just kind of, you know, settles into what he's doing now. And then they kind of bypassed what I think was an opening there for him. But Jay White and Cole, you know, gives them some depth in the spot that they need. And I could see those two headlining an AEW pay-per-view. I mean, that's not a profound statement, you know, in the next year or two.
I think it's really good, too, that Adam Cole is finally positioned as a babyface in a top company because, I mean, he had virtually a cup of coffee in that role in NXT, and what we got of it was strong. And then to now have him come into AEW and be playing sort of against the grain as a heel, I mean, people just he's not unlike Bryan Danielson in that way. People just want to cheer Adam Cole because people know who Austin Jenkins is, and that, you know, it's a blessing and a curse because Adam Cole is really good at playing a heel, but he's also known for being literally the sweetest guy in the business. So I mean, at some point you've got to just let fans cheer him.
Yeah, I agree. And he's a better fit in the AEW environment as a main eventer than he was in WWE. And I don't think AEW fans want to boo him. I don't think they want to boo John Moxley or Bryan Danielson or Claudio either. But, you know, that's a whole other issue. Okay. 630 dropped off. You were going to be next. So if you're still listening, call back. I know all access, you talk about All Access coming to an end. I'm looking forward to some of our regulars coming back because I've heard from some of them who are like, I got to watch All Access, and then I'm not hearing the show, and then I'm not calling in. So come on back, and I encourage first-time callers, too, to do so, too. But I appreciate the emails coming through strong with so many of you, even though you're watching All Access afterwards and listening to us later and sending in some good mailbags in recent weeks, too. Yeah,
have,
Brandon?
Have you been watching All Access?
Some of it.
Yeah.
I've got to catch up on paying full attention to it. Sometimes I just put it on when I'm editing the podcast, but I find myself going, I need to rewatch this. I didn't pay enough attention when I was, you know, doing edits. So
I mean, it's fascinating. I mean, it's certainly interesting for what it is so far. And I think that, you know, they're part of the cool thing about shows like this is that if you heavily feature guys and girls who are on your program as baby faces, you can get them really, really invested in these people's lives because they become real people to you. On the flip side, it can kind of hurt people's heel characters. Like one of the biggest things with All Access so far has been that, hey, Sammy Guevara is kind of a, you know, he's a nice guy with a cool story and he worked really hard for this. And yes, there is something naturally unlikable about him, but now when he's healing on TV, you're kind of thinking about, oh man, well, I mean, he worked at Subway and now he, you know, he worked to this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure that it's helpful to his character to show that side of himself, but you know, I'm trying to think of how you can parlay that into working with him as a heel because he's just was so bland as a babyface.
Oh yeah,
you know, you're gonna be a genuinely nice guy, but that doesn't mean that translates into this dynamic wrestling character. So I just don't know if you can take, you know, what people are seeing with Sammy going, oh yeah, I'm kind of rooting for him now, and how you can turn that into heel heat because I mean, if he wants to be a babyface, it's gonna limit his upside for a while. You know, maybe there's a time he grows into, you know, sort of being, you know, a veteran, you know, proven, you know, legacy guy in the AEW context. And he, you know, and people just appreciate him and he doesn't have to be bombastic and dynamic and particularly charismatic in a typical top guy way. And, you know, Bret Hart comes to mind in that respect. But in the meantime, he's so much better, you know, as Jericho's lackey and being an agitator and obnoxious and leaning into that. And that doesn't mean doing a bunch of meta stuff. You know, that shouldn't be done, period. But anyway, so I'm curious if All Access is just this it doesn't, it's not part of the canon of AEW, or they find a way to kind of weave it in and try to capitalize on it. But I don't see any obvious way for that to happen, to be honest. Back to emails. Jay from Columbia, South Carolina is up next. He said, I wasn't really excited for tonight's Dynamite, but I think it was still pretty good overall. Some thoughts to that end. One, Swerve and Darby was a great way to open the show. Very good match, as expected, but it also led nicely into the promo segment with MJF and Sting. That was a good promo from Darby. Can we expect more of this and less film school vignettes from him? These segments together were roughly a quarter of the show, and it really made Darby feel like the most qualified to actually challenge MJF for the title. Also, continued focus on Swerve is appreciated. Despite his flashy in-ring style, he's a top-notch heel. I am all for it. But when we talk about people who AEW should push, and we say, oh, Jay White, Adam Cole, that's obvious. They've got the credentials, but Swerve Strickland should be on that list.
Yes.
You don't want to define him. Like Ricky Starks, it's all start and stop, start and stop. And I don't know what his contract situation is and I know there's been a couple flub-ups here and there in certain ways, but overall he's been stellar. And, having Juice Robinson talk mean about him is not, and Jay White, I mean, I guess with Jay White, Starks and Jay White can be a good match, but it just feels like, oh, Ricky's the first guy they're feeding to Jay White as he moves up the card. And to me, if you're investing in Starks, you build up Jay White and Starks separately, and then you match them when people can't imagine who's going to win because it's such a tough call. Swerve Strickland, so my point is Ricky's getting defined down a little bit by the start-stop and being the first guy for Jay. Swerve is somebody who you want to be careful not to define down because I think there's not top guy like potential that's all that likely, but whatever that next level is, and he's not there yet, but someone who you can imagine main eventing a TV show and having credible near falls against anyone, including, say, Kenny Omega. Like, I'd like to see Swerve get built up strong enough as a heel and Kenny as a babyface singles, where that match feels appropriate for a top 4 or 5 match on a pay-per-view in a top-level feud for Kenny. That, that's just grabbing one name of a list of potential ones. And so, yes, I'm as Jay said, continued focus on Swerve is appreciated. Same here. There's something cool and special about him that still feels untapped.
Yeah, Swerve's definitely on my short list of guys that I would like to see featured prominently in AEW. In fact, my first thought tonight when they kicked off with that Darby and Swerve match was that, man, I don't think I would book this match. Because not because they won't mesh well, not because they won't have a great match, but because I really don't think either guy could afford a loss right now. And unfortunately, Swerve took the fall, and I understand why, because they need to get Darby ready for MJF. But I would have kept them away from each other for now, because I think it is worth building Swerve up to a significant degree and making him a viable upper mid card to potential occasional main event visitor. I think that the ball, they've dropped the ball in some respects with Swerve in the sense that he has been one of those guys that's been largely relegated to Rampage, and just knowing how few people, first of all, watch Rampage, and secondly, how very clearly AEW views it as barely even a B show, but closer to a C show, it's unfortunate because I think Swerve has become synonymous with Rampage, and Keith Lee was that way for a while too. So getting him more heavily featured on Dynamite in more prominent position is definitely something that I would hope that they'll be looking to do. I think that, if you want a good example of how effective Swerve can be, I mean, I don't know that you have to look much further than to his run in NXT and look at how fresh and exciting Hit Row felt under his direction, and then what happened to Hit Row the second you removed him from the equation.
Yes, yes. All right. Up next from Jay, Orange Cassidy had a predictably good match with Buddy Matthews. The match quality is probably more than the title deserves. However, Orange Cassidy seems less like a joke and is actually making the international title seem like less of a joke as well. Is it possible against all odds that I will care when someone beats Orange Cassidy for that title? Jay, I can't speak for you, but I do believe they have turned that title into something more important, and I reiterate my wish that they had switched from All Atlantic to TV title rather than international, which just, it, yeah,
It feels like what the TNT title felt like in the early days of AEW.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that unfortunately, that's not great news for the TNT title, and it speaks to the idea that there are just too many titles. But I think it's usurped that title.
And so I couldn't imagine how beating Nakazawa and Brandon Cutler to a pulp would make BCC seem heelish, given the punchability of both of those elite lackeys. Mm-hmm. Still, it looks like it's working, with the crowd siding with the elite. Also, Sirius Kenny Omega is a force to be reckoned with, and hopefully will return to the single scene after this BCC detour. Seems like pretty unanimous endorsement of that Kenny Omega promo. I hope he gets wind of it, and I hope he's inspired by it, encouraged by it, buoyed by it, and goes, oh, people like my Sirius promo. You know, Logan Roy telling his kids you're not serious people. I can imagine, like, you know, some veterans looking at Kenny and going, you're not a serious person. Yeah. You know, grow up, be an alpha, and be a serious person, because, you know, he was good at it tonight. So I'm glad others are making the point that I thought too.
Yeah, I actually just listened to Kenny's interview that he did with Renee Paquette on her show, The Sessions. And the interview's about a month old now, but most of the content's evergreen for the most part. And of course, the big headlines were the stuff he did or didn't say about the CM Punk situation. But there's a lot to glean from that interview. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that sort of it was both. It was nice to hear about Kenny the man, but sad to hear from the perspective of a fan watching him perform, was just that it's not that he lacks motivation now, but that he just doesn't feel like he has anything left to accomplish. And so his goal at this point is sort of imparting that wisdom on the generation behind him and trying to help them not just succeed, but succeed quicker than he was able to.
I just want to know who's in that painting of two shirtless muscle guys in jeans that was in the background over Kenny's shoulder in his interview promo. It was blurred out. They did the background blur, but I got a kick out of that being a thing. I still love that Vince McMahon had a painting of himself over his fireplace back in the day. All right,
a very Logan Roy-esque thing.
Oh, totally. Finally, Jay says, as an aside, why does it seem like Jay White is more interested in building up Juice Robinson than being the top guy he should be presented as? And as an extra side bonus points to Jeff Hardy for not stopping to dance on his way to rescue his brother. I love that point. There are times you got to break the gimmick and break from it. And yeah, don't dance when you're making a save. So bonus points to Jeff. But yeah, you know, it did seem like Jay White was, you know, he's trying to establish, you know, Bullet Club Gold and talking about himself a bit, but he really was like, this Juice guy, he's more serious, he's more important than you guys might be thinking. And that did seem to be part of the mission tonight.
Yeah, I definitely got that. And it that's why I think that I would have preferred just like a one-on-one backstage interview with Renee, just something where, you know, she can get a couple of one-liners out of him, something, you know, he can give a bit of a mission statement, just something that focuses more on him and less on the Bullet Club stuff.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines and go to Brian in Boston, who has given us a call. Brian, thanks for calling. What's your mind about Dynamite tonight? What stood out?
I didn't really like the Jeff Hardy thing so much. I mean, it wasn't bad. It's just that I think, how long is it going to be before he falls off the wagon again? And, you know, what if he kills somebody doing the drunken driving thing? I don't know. I just think the bloom's kind of off that rose with him. I mean, he still got the star power and stuff, and maybe he did. I mean, Tony Khan did say that he would only let him back if he went through rehab and things, but it's not as if Jeff Hardy hasn't been in rehab before. I just don't think bringing him back is the best idea in terms of things. I mean, say what you want about CM Punk, but at least he hasn't, almost killed somebody or something. I just worry that with Hardy, he's going to leave enough rope to hang himself and eventually maybe kill somebody on the rope like Tandy Sitch did. So I'm just wondering if you guys have any thoughts about that.
Yeah, I mean, we talked quite a bit about it earlier. And yeah, I mean, it's a legit concern. And as I said, we should have, you know, make sure that there are people keeping an eye on Jeff. There's just enough of a track record there. That is not patronizing to say. You know, like he needs someone to make sure he's okay and that he's not going to hurt other people. I mean, flat out. And it's going to be on Matt and Tony and, you know, a handful of others. If that's not the case, if you bring somebody back into your realm.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think you should be in jail instead of, you know, out on the streets and everything, but whatever. The women's segment was actually pretty good. I've just been getting sick and tired of Riho week in and week out. I mean, what happened to Sheeta? Did she disappear all of a sudden? I mean, but I hate to say I'm glad in seeing somebody get powerbombed, but it was kind of nice to see the heels finally put her down with a powerbomb. Hopefully that means we'll get less of Riho going forward and maybe bringing back Sheeta or something, or, you know, focusing on the champion. I thought overall it was pretty good, and I'm looking forward to that tag match next week. So just wondering if you guys talked about the women yet tonight.
No, we haven't. Brandon, what do you think of the match? What do you think of what Brian brings up?
Yeah, match was fine. I mean, I'm glad that they're trying to hone in their focus a little bit. It does seem like they pick and choose randomly who is and isn't going to be featured. I don't have an issue with Riho being featured for the time being, but I think obviously the story that they're trying to tell is ultimately the, you know, the outcast versus the AEW originals, and they're continuing the build toward that slowly but surely. I think that there's still a lot of work to be done with that division as a whole. I just think that, you know, aside from Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter, there's been a real struggle to get characters genuinely over. I mean, you heard tonight Tony Schiavone tried to make it seem as though Riho got a great reaction, and she didn't. There just wasn't much of a reaction there at all. I think that, you know, that I don't think is an indictment specifically on Riho, but rather how poorly a job they've done with the division as a whole outside of Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. I just think even Saraya, who, you know, came in to a flurry from audiences, has cooled off significantly. I mean, the crowd just doesn't seem to care all that much for this heel stuff. Toni Storm never really clicked the way that I hoped and many hoped that she would. Ruby Riott, you know, they're doing this heel thing with her and it's fine, but nothing has really stuck in any significant or dramatic way. And I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah. I'm a little higher on the Outcasts than I think you are, Brandon, but I'm not like shocked at your take on things. And I guess I'm just being a little more patient, but overall the women's division doesn't have a ton of defined coherence to it. And there's still just, you know, it just doesn't seem like a passion of Tony Khan's and never has. But I don't think he's ever grossly underutilized any of the women he has. I just don't think he's had a great women's roster, but he also, I think there's so many women who have been doing so much on AEW Dark and that hasn't resulted in much. You know, I mean, Willow Nightingale, you know, it got kind of popular, you know, on a grassroots level through Dark performances and stuff and got a bit of a push. But yeah, it's just, it's sort of like Ricky Starks would talk about start, stop, interested, lose interest. Oh, that's right. He's there. Let's do something with him again. And the women's division feels that way too. I don't think they're at a low point right now, but, and like I said, I kind of like I think there's still potential with the chemistry with Soho and Saraya and Storm. I'm not, like I said, I'm not quite as at the level you are, Brandon, but I don't know. Anyway. Yeah. Brian, back to you.
I think my recommendations would be is that they need to stop having the women in that dead end segment, like right at the 9:20 to 9:30 mark. I mean, that's always been a killer for them. And usually I've noticed when it goes into the first when they do it in the first hour, the crowd's livelier and things. Because, you know, at that point, when they usually put the women on the segment they do, the crowd's kind of exhausted because they've been watching wrestling for a few hours at that point. So I think that has a lot to do with it.
And they're not into it because it's not built up. That's part of it, too.
Yeah,
it's like it's in that spot in part because, I mean, they're just not, you know, they need more buildup and they need, you know, a more they just need more storyline. And, you know, I mean, it's not just the women. Oh. I mean, Jericho, Keith Lee deserved more going into the main event tonight. But, you know, the priority, it's a deliberate strategy, is original first-run action, original first-run promos, short vignettes, get in and out, and you know, push forward. And, I mean, I understand thinking that that's needed, but I think putting a bunch of fresh live content on the screen without context or with not taking it, not building it up more, you know, it leads to getting less out of that original content. And I think there's a sweet spot and they're not hitting it. And the women suffer more than anything as far as that goes. They're in that spot because Tony Khan's not confident they'll hold numbers before the main event. They're not in that spot, you know, I don't think for any other reason. You know, I mean, he'd be putting them in more prime spots. And he has on occasion when he thinks he has something hot.
Oh, and I also think that Tony Khan, he needs to he either needs to hire someone or lean on someone to, like, book the women's division separately, because someone who's actually going to take the time to build things up, because it's very clear that he doesn't I don't think he does it intentionally or anything, but he has a hell of a lot on his plate to deal with, and I think just the women aren't really high on the priority list. So I think if he could delegate that to someone. And also they took, I mean, the Originals versus Outcast storyline is something that could have been really, really something, and it's just kind of died kind of like a wet fart at a dinner table, you know, courtesy of Sean Spears making some kind of a joke to go back to your line of thinking there. But I just think, you know, the storyline has not been consistent. I mean, it's been consistent on the heel side, but with the face side, you know, it should be focused primarily on Hayter, Baker, and maybe one other person like Sheeta. I mean, where was Sheeta in all of this? She was in the lead up to it. And, you know, they just cycle back between Baker and Hayter, Riho and Sky Blue, who Sky Blue is a glorified jobber. Yeah. I'm glad
she signed.
And that's how
they prefer her, to be honest.
Yeah. And I'm glad she signed, and I'm hoping they can build her up for something. But, you know, the problem is there's been a lack of continuity, a lack of consistency. I mean, you can't expect people to care when you just cycle in between the two main stars of it, Baker and Hayter, and cycle in someone who looks like they could get blown over by a 5-mile-an-hour gust of wind, and you know, in a glorified jobber. I think that's the problem. You need consistency, and that just doesn't have it.
Yeah. Anything you want to add to that, Brandon?
I agree.
Brian, anything else you want to say? Bring up.
Other than I'm kind of looking forward to a possible playoff series between my Dallas Stars and your Minnesota Wild, potentially. That'll be good if that happens. But I'll bring up one more point, you know, kind of the three-point thing. I thought the opening segment, like, lasted about 30 minutes, more or less, in between commercial breaks. But Swerve and Darby was awesome, and I liked the finish with the Last Supper, so it didn't feature Swerve getting laid out. That was a phenomenal match, but the aftermath of it with MJF, you know, being his golden self and not singing this time, because, I mean, the singing last week was tolerable. It wasn't as crappy as that dinner debonair debacle that never should have happened, but I'm kind of like a Todd Martin sort of thing. Singing doesn't have a place in wrestling unless you're like Hollywood Rock doing a rock concert back in the day. but he was great on the mic, and Darby, I thought, cut some of the best promo work I've ever heard. And then Sting coming out, pumping him up.
Yeah.
I just thought overall the segment was good. It's some good storytelling, and it was really the highlight of the show for me. I just so I'll just hang up for now, and have a good night, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. Brandon, I want to get your thoughts on MJF singing in Long Island.
I think that I liked it more than I think the general consensus. I mean, I didn't love it. I get the criticisms of it entirely, but I just think that it was charming's not the right word. It was consistent with what I would expect that character to do in the moment.
And yeah, you're saying similar things to me on the post show last week. Like it makes no sense. I don't know what purpose it served. It doesn't belong on a wrestling show. I'm sure it tested the patience of a lot of fans. And yet I was, you know, sort of delighted, not delighted by it, but I was like, it was, yeah, you're right. English language doesn't serve us here. Cause there's some category that falls into with you and with me. And there's not that word that's coming to mind to describe it. And that's why we have the sources, but, cause it probably is out there. People have probably felt the way we do about it. I think as a one-off, as a way to just do something memorable and different where you're just going WTF through the whole thing, but you're also kind of entertained. And when it doesn't go anywhere, you're like kind of okay with that, but you feel guilty being okay with it. Like I just had lots of mixed feelings, but
yeah,
you know, it's not, you know, MJF's coming out and just talking to Long Island and being a baby face for a night or turning on Long Island. And it's like, it's a break from the norm. Yeah, I don't know. So I wonder if there's ulterior motives, like he's just trying to show, like he's auditioning for like crossover things, you know, because he's got, you know, acting stuff he's into, and you know, maybe he's going to follow in the Chris Jericho pattern to become kind of a multimedia icon who just appears, you know, remember VH1's, what was the show Jericho's always on? The pop culture stuff that anyway, Jericho was a talking head on that, and Jericho just any opportunity he had to like make himself part of Americana and a crossover, you know, celebrity, he worked to do. Jeff Jarrett tried that a little bit in TNA with like NASCAR and ESPN and who else came to mind? Even just like Ric Flair, you know, I mean, Ric Flair's like, you know, there's pro wrestling night speaking of the NHL, St. Louis Blues game a few weeks back, and he was there and introduced the show, and the announcers are talking about him, and they're wooing over the PA system, and I just think MJF wants to be that level.
You could compare it to the Miz. Miz has done a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and I think MJF aspires to be more Ric Flair than Miz in that regard.
Oh,
in
sure.
Terms of how he's seen, but yeah, absolutely, totally. So anyway, yeah, go ahead, Brandon.
Yeah, I just think that, like, one of the things I think that I liked about it is that it was a total waste of time, ultimately. But MJF is someone whose character would revel in the idea of wasting the fans' time and wasting Tony Khan's money.
Yeah, and just being full of himself and self-indulgent and thinking he's great. He's this multi-talented, character. I don't know. So, okay. Joseph emailed and said, "Hi guys, I had a question about the MJF Darby promo tonight. In the past and again tonight, MJF referred to Darby as emo, and I'm wondering if this is just a throwaway comment used as an insult to Darby, or if this is a strategically placed insult being consistently used to draw heat because AEW fans are a very different demographic than WWE fans, including my fellow emos, and it gets those fans to get behind Darby. Thanks, and have a great rest of your week." I don't know that emo would be like a triggering term for AEW fans. I don't know. I don't have a sense of how much emo culture is like a thing that people are talking, you know, that like high school or middle school kids are talking a ton about compared to past generations. I'm just, I got a 14-year-old son. I mean, I can ask him, but I don't know if that was a strategy or meant as an insult or meant as just sort of a somewhat accurate term for a guy who's just sort of like moody and introspective and withdrawn.
Yeah, it's, man, emo is used as sort of like a catch-all for a whole subgenre of personality types and also music. And
right.
And the thing is like it doesn't, so like I listened to a lot of bands that would be considered emo that would not mesh with Darby Allin's vibe. Like it wouldn't line up with his presentation. But I also understand like lumping him into that category as like a larger part of culture as a whole. So like on a granular level, like I don't really think he qualifies, but in the macro sense, I guess. So yeah, I don't know that it's necessarily meant to be triggering in any type of way. And also like wrestling fans that are of the age that AEW is catering to specifically are likely to be sympathetic to the personality types and sort of the emotions associated with emo culture. I don't think they're going to take being called emo as an insult.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Joseph, thanks. And he says, thanks and have a great rest of your week. You too. All right. Ellen from Cambridge, Ontario says, I love Jeff Hardy growing up. To me, the Hardys were iconic. And then I was all for Jeff overtaking John Cena as the top guy in WWE. I remember when that was a thing. Now I just can't watch him. I just saw a clip of the documentary from him and TNA where after he was too messed up to compete against Sting, he said that was a wake-up call he needed to get his life in order, which obviously wasn't the case. How many times was his addiction an issue in WWE, then TNA, then WWE again? Tony Khan looked like a complete fool for signing him immediately after WWE released him, and then drugs became an issue within his first couple of weeks in AEW. I hate saying it, but no company should ever put him on TV again. I truly hope he gets his life in order before something extremely tragic happens to him or someone else. Thanks for the great podcast. I mean, I don't know if we're representative of the larger fan base. He got a nice pop coming out. But I do think it's well known enough what Jeff's been through that it's not like this celebration comeback story. And you know, I mean, that was such a thing. That there's a story they told in WWE, and I didn't like it. I didn't like turning this super real-life issue and then putting him out there talking about it the way that he did. It almost felt like they were asking for a relapse or putting him out there so he could, you know, build himself up and then fall. I'm not prescribing motives, but, you know, at all, but I mean, it can come across that way. I mean, that's a lot to go. Well, I had these problems, but now I don't. And when you just proclaim that on TV, the pressure, to live up to that can almost be this kind of counterproductive self-fulfilling prophecy. I don't know. So I definitely have mixed feelings. My inclination is he's disqualified himself from earning a paycheck as a admired public figure. That's where I stand on him. And I'm not about canceling him if he wants to be a productive agent behind the scenes, or he wants to host a podcast, or if he wants to do something completely unrelated to pro wrestling. It's not like, oh, don't get near him. I just think, so it's not about canceling him. It's about how many chances do you get, and is giving him another chance helpful or asking for trouble? You know, and I'll ask around, you know, kind of about where his head's at and what went into the decision and let that shape my opinion a little bit more if I get more information. But, I mean, the emails we're getting and the calls we're getting, it just, I think a lot of people are going to be not thrilled about this decision by Tony Khan and collectively Matt Hardy too.
Yeah, I think the latter portion, what you're speaking about, is my biggest thing. It's like if someone is of the belief that Jeff Hardy should never be anywhere near a wrestling ring again, I think that that is a perfectly valid opinion to hold at this point, or even, you know, in the public spotlight in any significant major way because of what he's done and sort of the constant second, third, fourth, fifth chances that he has been given. But I think the even bigger concern and story here is putting him in that position, putting him at greater risk to relapse and do it all over again. And I just think that, you know, unfortunately, we're not going to have an answer to that question until it either happens or it doesn't. So at that point, it's too late. So it's just an unfortunate situation. I would probably err on the side of not bringing him back, but I also understand that, you know, they've got him under contract. He's a big star and they want to make money off of him.
We didn't talk about the angle with Powerhouse Hobbs and Wardlow in the car. I would have preferred the car be something they introduced a few weeks ago. Yeah. And then it got smashed after the fact. What do you think?
Yeah, the car, I thought that in a vacuum, I thought that Wardlow smashing the car and then coming out to do the beatdown was fine. But like you, I think that I would have much preferred that they introduce the car as a big thing for a few weeks at least before having Wardlow destroy it and pretending that it meant so much to Powerhouse Hobbs when it's something that we haven't really seen with any major significance before. So, I mean, I get why they do it. They did it because I guess they want to get to that match next week, and it's a hook for Dynamite. But I would have... prefer that they expand on that story a little bit. I did want to note that power bomb from Wardlow on Aaron Solo was nasty. I don't know caught that, but Solo, the back of Solo's head hit the second table, and the impact was so significant that he cracked the underneath, like the metal trim that goes around those tables. It dislodged from the table because his head hit it so hard.
Yep. It was not good. And the way he reacted initially and then kind of went back to selling meant it jarred him significantly. And I was not at all a fan of that spot. And I mean, I just think there's some major diminishing returns doesn't feel like the right term for continuing to do this. But
if you're gonna do that spot, you've got to make sure he goes through both tables.
Oh, I know, that's the thing. But I mean, they obviously aren't capable of making sure these moves go as planned. You know, and I mean, after the Dante Martin thing, it's just like, you know, I mean, yeah. I mean, you put two tables next to each other. The point is the table absorbs the impact and you break it in the middle and his head hit the edge of it. And I don't want to be, alarmist, but I mean, that could have been a significantly more serious injury. And I just, for what?
It's one thing to hit the table on the edge like that, but to be able to then physically see that the hit was so hard that it dislodged the metal piece underneath the framing.
Yeah.
That's what took me back.
Yeah, totally, totally. Anything else, Brandon, you want to bring up about the show tonight?
No, I think just that opening segment I thought was the strongest piece. I was disappointed in the main event. The middle there with Cassidy and Buddy Matthews was really good. Middle of the road episode overall, I would say there was a lot of stuff that I liked, but there's also just a lot of the sort of the nagging issues that I think plagues AEW on a consistent basis. So, this is a weird time of year for them because they're inching toward Double or Nothing. They are very much in the rear view of Revolution. They were already like a month and a half out. So there's a lot of time. There's a lot of TV time to fill in between. And you definitely feel it in terms of the storyline development. They're starting to inch toward Double or Nothing, but there's still a lot of just middling in the meantime.
Yep. All right, great. Well, thanks, Brandon. Thanks, callers. Thanks, emailers. Thanks to our listeners. And we'll be by tomorrow with the flagship with Todd Martin on the Blue Logo Show, the Wade Keller Podcast. And then we'll be back Friday. Alex McDonald joining me on the SmackDown Post Show. Brandon, thank you so much.
Yeah, certainly fun to be here.
All right.